Last week, Joni Mitchell flew into Sydney to do some promotion for her new album, Chalk Mark in a Rainstorm. Joni has spent the last 4 months travelling the world, talking to people like me, and even after such an extensive tour, she was very enthusiastic to talk about herself and her music. Beginning with childhood, we take up our conversation somewhere in Greece.
Well, I was born near the end of the Second World War, 1943. It was a time of rationing. It was in Saskatchewan and Alberta, where I lived. These provinces were only about a generation from the pioneering spirit. Most people came to settle land that was up for grabs, basically. My grandfather came as a homesteader. He raised his children in a town called New Norway, which was a Norwegian settlement. My mother also came, well, he came from fiddle makers and violin makers and cabinet makers in Norway. My mother's parents came from Scotland and Ireland, and the Scottish side of the ancestry, my great-great-grandfather, or my great-great-great, I'm not sure how many greats to put on it, but he was Sir Walter Scott's star plowman. So we come from a long line of tillers of the soil. My generation of the generation of my parents came up in the Great Depression, which was a difficult time to have your youth. As a result, their education came to a halt. It was extreme poverty, Dust Bowl. Let's see, getting back to, those are my roots, my background. Childhood, we moved around a lot. My father was in the service. After the war was over, it was difficult to just get a job and hold it. He worked in small grocery stores, and that led him to be moved around a lot. The migration pattern of us as a family was from the small store in Maidstone, Saskatchewan, a hamlet of about 400 people, very primitive, no running water, pump in the kitchen, drinking water delivered on horse-drawn wagons, to a town with a water tower and two theaters up the road, North Battleford, the marching band. My father played trumpet for dance bands on the weekends sometimes. He was a big Harry James fan. In the town of, in both of these towns, being small, we lived next to the country. I spent a lot of time walking through the bush by myself as a kid. I liked flowers and birds and looking at the color of the light. I drew from a very early age and had, between childhood diseases and moving a lot, a rich internal life. I was pretty much independent. Although I wasn't without friends, I needed to find creative children to play with. There weren't a lot of creative children coming up where I came up. They were more athletically prone, and because of my frailty.
What was your frailty?
Well, I just was prone to get everything. You know, I got polio, I got chicken pox. I mean, I got everything that I got severely, and I was always coming down with something.
Do you think perhaps having a sickly or a poor health as a child could have worked as a catalyst in any way, you know, for your creativity?
Oh, yeah, because I, you know, hallucinating into the cracks on ceilings and walls in hospitals produces a kind of a visionary eye, an imaginative eye. Moving around and constantly being the new kid in town develops a sense you have to find your own self-worth, you know, creates an independence. My parents didn't want me to grow up to be provincial, so they would tear off on their 2 week summer holidays, driving great distances to show me that other things existed. So as a prairie child, I would know that there were mountains and waterfalls. And my mother had been a country school teacher, so she was pretty much impressing flora and fauna and history on me. So these vacations were, I felt, an imposition, and I would have preferred to just go to the lake like all the other kids, and perhaps I would have emerged differently and more normal, you know, if you, seeing myself as a kind of a phenomenon within the context of my generation and my locale. By the time I got to my teens, the kids that I babysat for, who were, you know, 6 to 10 years my junior, most of them grew up to become potters and weavers and musicians. I don't think so much by my influences that By that time, it was not such an abnormality. 10 years behind me came a wave of artistic interest. It was seen as something valuable. Up until then, the artist in the family was something to be ignored and dismissed. It was an aberration, I think. I had been a bad student academically all the way through the school system, which I think was a blessing. I didn't learn to memorize and regurgitate in the normal manner, and had to this day have a difficult time with labels and things, but I have a good sequential mind. It works better, I think, for the spacing out all through the school system in some ways. I'm a terrible Trivial Pursuits player, which is the downside. That's about as bad as it gets. That's about the only regret I have for having spaced out all through the school system.
Was there any particular artist or musical experience that then directed you to music yourself?
Oh, a lot of them. Well, when I was in the first few grades of school, my two best friends were quite accomplished child musicians. Frankie McKittrick could play complex Bach and Mozart at an early age, and he played the church organ with big pipe organ. His feet could barely reach the pedal. So he had a prodigious talent. The other boy I played with, Peter, is in an opera company somewhere in the world, I don't know where. So they were the musicians and I was the artist, and we used to put on circuses and round up all the kids in the neighborhood, kind of like our gang things. I would make the posters and nail them all to the trees all over the neighborhood. And I always had an eye for talent, so I would conscript anybody that could do anything to put them in our sideshows. And, so there was social play also, but it was mainly these extravaganzas that we put on annually. And Frankie and I both had it instilled in us by Miss Brady, our fourth grade teacher, that the Red Cross was a wonderful institution, so we donated everything to charity. It's amazing when I think we would raise, like, sometimes $4 or $5 at a penny, you know, a head for these jip joint shows that we put in on, you know, see the boxing match, step for one penny, step inside, and there's a match in a box. You know, we had all these jip joint side shows in there. And we would raise quite a bit of money and turn it in. I remember the trek, the annual trek, down to the woman who would take our, like, Red Cross donation. And it was something we did really without anybody laying into it, but Brady had convinced us that temperance and charity were the two major virtues in life, I think.
Growing up in the 50s was nice.
Yeah, it had difficult times. Harry Pegg used to break my huts down in my backyard. Geraldine Campbell used to chase me down the back alley with an axe. But aside from that, it was okay. The way my music developed, because of the eccentric way that I play the guitar, the neck is never the same. It's tuned a lot of different ways, I guess 30-some at this point, almost 40. Because of that, and I slap on the drum down here, my rhythmic sense and my harmonic sense is different. And in the difference, it doesn't really fit into any idiom, jazz or pop, or it's just kind of different. And rock players couldn't play it. They didn't have enough harmonic sophistication, so they would be laying a major or a minor or a seventh or at most an augmented chord, you know, which was their only harmonic vocabulary, against these chords, and so they'd be squashing them. It would be like painting red over like a dusty road or something, you know what I mean? They couldn't, and rhythmically they'd be marching through it like folk rock, you know, four beats to the bar, you know, the backbeat, you can't lose it, and that music won't hold that. There are bars of three quarters, suddenly there are intricacies rhythmically. So finally one drummer said to me, you know, Joan, you're going to have to play with jazz musicians. So I went looking around in the jazz clubs for my players. Now, I'd been interested in jazz as a listener in my teens. I'd been exposed to some of Miles and Lambert Hendricks and Ross, so I wasn't a stranger to it. You could say that perhaps it had even had an influence in my harmonic sense, since I had listened to it, and classical music and rock and roll. Before I began to make my own music, I'd absorbed several different idioms, including, you know, big band era and the McGuire sister harmony and so on.
Halls and the galleries, written in the OTB. Corner.
It could be beauty down the street. with you.
Do you have a definite idea of what the record will sound like when you've recorded it?
I don't go into the project with an intellectual map. All I have is a collection of songs, which if I was to record them the way they're born, you wouldn't see much difference between my early work and my later work. In other words, most people would not discern the growth. There's been harmonic growth, and my phrasing obviously has changed, but a girl and a guitar would resemble more like how I began. So we have the architecture and the structure and the limitation of the song in that form. And from then on, it's kind of an intuitive process based on luck, who's around, an idea followed by a phone call, the lucky accident. I need a lot of surprises in the studio to feel happy and lucky. So there needs to be a climate where failure is not scrutinized by intellect, or, you know, where failure can take place in order for new things to be discovered. That's the hardest part when you're working with new people.
In fact, you use some surprise musicians upon this new album, Chalk Mark and a Rainstorm, in Ben Orr, Peter Gabriel too, and Billy Idol. How did you come by choosing those people to sing with?
Well, Ben Orr and Peter Gabriel were in the neighborhood where I began recording. They were at hand. Peter offered me a studio to record in, fell by, and I put him to work, you know, in the most playful way. We began working on Secret Place. My husband was producing Ben Orr 40 miles away on the other side of Bath, and I would go into their studio dates from time to time, and Ben had a remarkable range, about 3 octaves. His solo voice came somewhere from the mid to the upper range, and so this low voice, which he used in his own harmonic stacking, wasn't really being used that much on his project. It was getting lost at the bottom of a chord or something. I had sung on The Beat of Black Wings, a sketch for Manu Cachet. It was to be a talking drum part, and it went was at the bottom of my range, you know, and it was to be replaced. But when I heard Ben singing in this low, rich voice, I said, wait a minute, I think I'm gonna double it with his voice and not replace it with talking drums. So, you know, ideas remain flexible. So when he had a day off one day, I said, you know, why don't you come with me to Peter's studio? So we drove out there and put it on.
The single that has been released so far off the new album is Secret Place. Could you tell me a bit about that one particular song?
It's a love song. It's basically set in the time period in the beginning of a relationship at the most psychic part of romance infatuation, when a man and a woman seem to be thinking, feeling as a unit, you know, before they split off and the wars begin again. You know, so I think the way Peter's voice and mine undulates through each other is pretty good. I mean, it's like, you know, two minds becoming one mind, you know, the beginning. It's the tentative part of a relationship where there's uncertainty, and the uncertainty breeds a certain kind of attentiveness and respect, you know, that can dissipate when people feel secure, unfortunately.
And the video itself has a real childlike quality to it, you and Peter Gabriel together. That's really nice.
Oh, it was lovely doing it.
Yeah.
And Anton, the guy that directed it, I think did a splendid job, just amazing. And there, yeah, it was really fun doing it.
Thank you very much, Joni Mitchell.
I'm gonna take you to my space.
a place that you,
like no one else I know,
might appreciate. I don't go there with anyone, but
your special case
for my special place. To tell you something
or to take up space.
Guess I'm only talking to be talking to your pretty face. I don't talk much to anyone, but you're a special case
for my special place.
I was born and raised in New York City. I'm just getting used to Colorado. Oh, street bravado. Carry me. Why did you bring me to a place so wild and pretty? Pigeons in this park, muggers after dark, in these golden trees. Hey, a secret place, a secret place. It all falls right in place
in my special space. My special place.
Once I saw a film.